Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
Show of hands real quick. Who needs help understanding the budget debacle at the state capitol and what's going on, right?
We do have some people down at the capitol trying to explain it.
Absolutely.
The Senate Democrats' proposed budget accelerates the restoration of district additional assistance by appropriating $150 million to accelerate that restoration of DAA.
All right, so ostensibly all those words were in English, and I should understand them. But when you put it all together, I admit I'm not exactly sure what's going on. Thank God we have some help joining us right now. Howie Fisher, reporter with Capital Media Services. And Howie, by the way, has been reporting down there at the state capitol. I mean, you go back into the 1900s. It's been a long time, right?
Well, it certainly feels that way, and this session is beginning to feel that way also.
Yeah, well, Howie, thank you for joining us, because we're trying to understand a little bit of what's going on. We've heard there is a budget, there is some form of agreement, there are people in disagreement. We've got R's on one side, D's on the other, cats and dogs living together.
Oh, definitely. Well, and as you point out, some of it is just translating, like that little clip earlier.
Yes.
About DAA.
Yeah.
This goes back to what they call district additional assistance that the legislature took away from schools during the recession. Well, the schools who are supposed to be using that money for things like textbooks, for things like computers, things like school buses, haven't gotten the full money back. And the proposal says we'll give them some more of that back this year, but not all of it for another couple of years. And that becomes one of the sticking points in this. The state is, I won't say rolling in money, but because of changes in federal tax law, because of other things, they've got enough money to put more money into the rainy day fund, to give a tax break. And the question is, well, but what about some of the services that have been cut over the years? And that's where the heart of the debate is.
Yeah, the heart of the debate comes down to building that rainy day fund up to $1 billion, of which Governor Ducey has wanted to do for quite some time, while also trying to invest in education, because there wasn't a rainy day fund back in 2008.
Okay.
Hence, it was raided and has never been restored back to those levels. So we've got Howie Fisher with Capital Media Services, a reporter down there at the Capitol, breaking down the budget for us. So beyond what you just laid out there for us, Howie, what else does this budget do to include education? Because that is such a critical issue in our state.
Well, they will be making the next set of payments on that 20 by 20 plan to raise teacher salaries on average 20% over 4 years. That money's built in. There's money built in for inflation. There's money built in for student growth. There is some additional money in there for career and technical education, what in my day we called SHOP. There's some money in there for teacher training that goes actually to the universities. But the question still becomes, why aren't we back to where we were given the amount of money that's out there? And that's a big issue for the Democrats. They say, rather than shoveling money into a rainy day fund or providing tax breaks because we have other revenues coming in because of changes in federal tax law, why aren't we using it for that? Now, among Republicans, who really count because they're the ones in the majority, there are some other issues. You have people like Senator J.D. Mesnard, who says we should actually be giving more money back more quickly to taxpayers. You have other folks like Senator Paul Boyer, who, along with Senator Heather Carter, says, well, I'm not going to vote for the budget until we deal with this related issue of how much time sex abuse victims have to sue. And all of this is important because you have to remember, Republicans hold only a 17-13 edge in the Senate. Two Republicans are off the budget, it's gone, unless you can get Democrat votes. It's even worse in the House, where it's a 31-29 Republican edge, which means one Republican can hold out and blow the thing up unless they can get Democrat votes.
Wow. So it's not as simple as R versus D. You have competing allegiances, competing priorities down there. And that is Howie Fisher, reporter with Capital Media Services. Is this just all the negotiation? For those of us that have not been down there every year, that don't go through the budget debate, the budget battles, is this just par for the course?
Well, not exactly, because normally by this time, we would have actually had the leadership meeting with individual members, crafting something that they could put together. Remember, we are in something like day 128 of the 100-day session. And the fact that we're just trotting out a budget now suggests that they didn't bring people together. They didn't find out what everyone needs. They didn't go ahead and look at the individual pieces and what does it take to build a budget from the bottom up. A lot of lawmakers see this as a top-down budget. This is something the governor started with what he wanted. Leadership talked about what they wanted and some of their key members wanted. And now we're at a point where the rank and file are saying, you want me to buy onto this? Well, I've got some questions.
Right. I think there are a lot of questions. And among them, Howie, is do they have the support to get this passed? I realize that the budget has some, I don't know if you want to call them like Democratic priorities in it to maybe get some of the support from the Dems, including money for counselors and school resource officers and public education. But is that enough to sway some Dems over to support this budget? Because it looks like even some Republicans aren't supporting it right now.
Well, at this point, the Dems don't see any particular reason to sign on. I mean, you talk, for example, about counselors. Yes, there is something like $15 million in there for counselors or school resource officers. But even if you add all the counselors that this would do, that still puts Arizona in absolute last place in terms of number of counselors per student. And if, in fact, you believe that one of the reasons we have school shootings and school suicides is that kids aren't getting the help they need, then maybe you need to reduce the student-to-counselor ratio. There isn't enough in there for them. There are other priorities that the Democrats have. How do you buy Democrat votes? Well, you could put more money in for certain things, but then maybe you lose Republican votes on the other side. Maybe you kill some bills that the Democrats don't want. For example, the Republicans are trying to make it harder to put measures on the ballot. And perhaps some Democrats would be willing to vote for the budget if they agree not to advance those measures. This is a piece that's about more than the budget. There's so many moving parts. Remember, there are going to be something like 400 bills coming out of here, 400 new laws, and a lot of pieces are saying, come down to people saying, well, I like this, I don't like that. What about if you pass my bill here or you kill my bill over here? I mean, there's so many little pieces on this.
Howie, thank you very much for your insight into this. We sincerely appreciate it. That's Howie Fisher, reporter with Capital Media Services, been doing this for, I won't say how many years, but has seen this play out over and over again. But Pamela, you can see how complex it is and how difficult this negotiation is moving forward just to get a budget in the state of Arizona.
Yeah, and I think Howie's point of, you know, we're 128 days into a 100-day session also kind of puts it into perspective for you as well. I know that there are a lot of educators that are hoping that this actually drags out a little bit longer because they want to wrap up the school year so that they can get down to the Capitol and have their voices heard there as well.
But don't you think this emphasizes the point? And it's a point that I try to make just based on observing the reality of politics in Arizona. When we all say education's important, everybody nods along. The people who vote on the money for education are not nodding their heads. At least not all of them are. There are people out there who you heard say, you know what? We think tax cuts are more important than putting more money in education. That's a belief that they hold. You can like it or not like it, but the idea that everyone agrees on where the money should be spent in a budget and that education's a top priority, no. It's not even close for some people.
Well, absolutely, and I'm not naive enough to think that it is a top priority for everyone. I just think that when you're looking to sock away an additional $540 million into Arizona's rainy day fund to bring that total up to $1 billion, I'm a saver. I understand, you know, preparing for the future, that rainy day fund, you got to have it. Why? Because it's going to rain someday. But to put all that money into that fund when you have education that is bleeding right now and you've never even restored it back to where it was when you first took it off is something. I'm not saying all of that money. I'm not saying all $540 million needs to go to education. But I think a little bit more should be going towards it because you guys were the ones that took it out to begin with. Put it back.
Well, and again, but you think, and there are people out there, he mentioned J.D. Mesnard specifically, who say, I'm not for the rainy day fund. I'm not for education. I'm for tax cuts.
And there are actually tax cuts in this.
Yeah.
There are actually tax cuts.
Give the money back to the people.
What they're proposing is going from like 5 tax brackets down to 4.
Simplifying.
Slightly lowering the tax rate. You know, matching the, you know, the federal standard deduction, $12,000 for a person, $24,000 for, you know, joint filers. Well, all of those things. But Mesnard is still saying not enough.
Not, again, everybody kind of has their own axe to grind, if you will, and that the dance is going on at the Capitol right now. We'll keep you updated on what that eventually looks like. It's specifically what it looks like for education moving forward. Do you still do that thing you did in high school? No, not that thing, for God's sakes. I meant the thing you did for fun, for leisure, the thing that you used to love doing. It made high school worth going to. Are you still doing it? How has high school ruined free time?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You kids today. We talk about it. We talk about a younger generation, and we talk about changes from maybe when you were a kid, when you were a teenager. But there is one thing out there, and I think it's a solid argument to be made, that leisure time, things you used to do just for fun because you love doing them, are not necessarily on the plate for kids in high school today.
Yeah, we've got summer that's almost upon us here. We've got a lot of seniors that may be heading off to college. And while school is ending, in a weird sense, as the New York Times puts it, some of their careers are ending as well. Think of it this way. When you've got a bunch of young people that are trying to get into college, what's the steady drumbeat that they hear? You got to be involved. You got to be engaged. You got to have activities. You got to do something. Do something.
You pad your resume for lack of better terms. They want to see you involved in a lot of things, but not on top of good grades.
Yeah, you know, whether it's a sport or whether it's in theater or whether it's something academic or all of the above, that you may have zero aspiration as to, you know, following up as a professional career. These were all the things you did outside of school just to get into college.
Right.
And there's an argument that's being made right now, and I think it's a pretty solid one as well, that this race that kids are under, this pressure that they have to be involved in so many different things at all costs and at all times, when it ends at high school and you go into college, have we ruined leisure, hobbies for a generation because they didn't do these things because they necessarily enjoyed them? They did them because there was a payoff. That payoff being, well, I did it just to get into college.
Well, how about this? Here's something I was thinking about as well. Are there things, activities, sports, whatever it might be, that kids may want to do, but because they aren't a means to an end, they're discouraged from doing them?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't pad that resume, because they don't look good on paper, that, and I can't tell you what one is, because I admit that I'm not in that world, but I have to believe, understanding how the pressure today is to look good on paper, so to speak. The pressure is to use your hobbies, your sports, your activities as a means to an end, that's got to come at the cost of some other things.
Yeah, when you take a look at what the cost could potentially be as an adult, obviously we've got to play this out a little bit here, but when you've been taught as a kid that every action has a purpose, it's harder to find meaning in doing the things you just enjoy. So it'd be very difficult to actually, you know, persuade yourself to do it. Like, what's the payoff here?
If there is no payoff, you don't do it.
Well, just the joy and the happiness and something that I like doing isn't enough. And I think that there is a real cost that could be associated with that.
Wow. Well, I get the pressure to compete for limited slots in scholarships, et cetera, or in admissions at colleges. But how sad is it to think that you are prohibited, prevented from, discouraged from doing something you really love, something that brings you joy, a passion of yours, because it doesn't further this rat race?
There's also something else that's been happening, I think, is worth exploring. And we're talking about how a lot of the adults want to give kids the best experience, all right, whether they're competing in a sport, in arts, or whatever it may be. So thinking about this, if you're an artist as a junior in high school, mm-hmm. and you've gotten like the gallery treatment for your art, or you are playing in the championship, fill in the blank,
right.
final game, and it's marked by a band and fireworks, where do you go from there? Like, how do you play a pickup game down at the rec hall and just find joy in it?
Right. Well, I mean, you think about maybe some of this like high school football. Like, there are kids, you do realize, there are kids that play, let's say it at Hamilton. There are kids that play at some of these schools in Texas that when they go to college are going to be playing in front of smaller crowds in smaller stadiums.
With worse facilities.
Yeah. And less of a payoff.
Kind of ruined it for him, man.
Yeah.
Like, you got to work
your way
up to that.
We set the bar way high.
Well, you know what? We've set the bar pretty high here at KTAR. That's why we are giving away $1,000. Yep, it is KTAR's call for cash. Just text the word cash right now to 411-923. Listen on air weekdays, 745, 445 in the afternoon, and you could be our next KTAR call for cash $1,000 winner.
When we say kids that aren't vaccinated, what runs through your mind? Some of the reasons why kids may not be vaccinated, susceptible to measles, mumps, rubella, whooping cough, right? Is poverty what comes to your mind? We'll tell you why it's having a big impact on vaccination rates in some areas. That's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
When you start thinking about vaccination, we have conversations about why people don't vaccinate. We get a variety of reasons, excuses, some very valid, a medical one, maybe a religious one. We hear some of the personal exemptions. That's when you start getting down the road of non-fact or non-science-based stuff. But I will admit that when we talk about why certain children don't have vaccines, aren't vaccinated, it never dawned on me that poverty might be at the root of this.
Yeah, but that's exactly what they're finding is to be one of the reasons.
Sure.
And it, like you, it's not something that I have really considered. Usually the whole like anti-vax movement is, you know, people that are afraid of putting those chemicals in their child's body for fear that it's going to cause other issues.
Sure.
But they have the choice to do that.
Right.
Apparently what we're finding out is in some, but not all situations, some, there's an economic factor to it. And from what we find, like, insurance isn't supposed to be a factor, but at times can be.
Insurance isn't supposed to be a barrier. There's been a federally funded program since the 90s called Vaccines for Children that provides free vaccination to children who are uninsured or on Medicaid. She says it's not clear why that program isn't reaching more kids.
And when I say it's not reaching more kids, let's give you some perspective here. We go back to 2017.
Okay.
75% of kids that didn't have insurance had vaccinations. Okay. 75%.
Still got the vaccination even though they weren't insured.
You look at those children who have private insurance, like, you know, my daughter
sure,
things along those lines. It's about 95%.
Okay. 20 points difference.
That's a pretty big gap.
And keep in mind, we know this medical concept, scientific concept of herd immunity requires mid to high 90 percentile to work for everyone. So when you're looking at kids who are growing up and living in poverty being in the mid 70s, that's a real issue.
We see large coverage gaps among children who are living below the poverty line compared to those at or above poverty, and among children who have no insurance. For some vaccines, they're up to 20 to 30 percentage points lower than kids who have private insurance.
You know, it's one thing. It's one thing to not vaccinate your child for some of the reasons we talked about. It's a completely another thing to have to put your child at risk because you're making decisions, and I'm going to make the assumption, Pamela, between feeding them, clothing them, or vaccinating them. You know what I'm saying? That you're literally at that point. So leaving that aside and knowing that we, the state of Arizona, needs to do a better job of reaching out to and letting people know there are opportunities to get vaccinated, even if you don't have insurance, even if you can't afford to pay for it like that. Governor Ducey is also taking up the mantle for this, taking a look at the vaccination rates. And he has I think he might a little bit have your cake and eat it too, but he's trying to walk a pretty fine line when it comes to encouraging vaccinations in Arizona.
So Arizona is one of 17 states in this country that you can choose not to vaccinate your kid under a personal exemption.
Okay.
Typically, you'll hear about a religious exemption or some sort of health exemption that would preclude you from actually getting your child vaccinated. But again, Arizona has this personal exemption that allows parents to decide, you know, we just don't want to do this, and the child can still be enrolled in school.
Right.
Governor Ducey is not removing that option.
No.
And granted, he can't do it just unilaterally, but it's one of those things where he's not even forcing that issue, which is changing in other states. They're
okay.
trying to remove
They're trying
that
to get rid
option
of it entirely, right?
From parents, saying if it's not a religious, it's not a health option, then you need to be vaccinating your children. Governor Ducey, though, says that he would prefer to educate parents on vaccinations, not tell them they have to do this. Now, he's been very clear on it, Bruce, that he supports immunizations. All right. All three of his kids have been vaccinated.
He's not an anti-vaxxer by any stretch.
No. But he's simply saying instead of taking away that option, we need to be countering it with more education to parents as to the benefits of vaccines.
That it's going to be education that turns it around. I think one of the problems is we are still living in an age, and I don't know how to grade it on what curve we're grading it on, where facts are debated. Facts used to be facts. Like, this is a fact. This is a scientific fact. The Earth is round. You know, gravity exists. We now get into debates over facts now. And the vaccine debate is you're either on the side of facts or you're on the other side of facts. How is education going to help people who don't accept facts?
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that there are some issues with vaccines, hence the reason why there is a fund that has been set up by the federal government that you can go and petition if you have been adversely impacted by vaccines. That is a fact. But there's also a fact that they are overwhelmingly safe. There is an exception to the norms, and hence the reason why that fund has been set up. But
there are no facts that say a vaccines cause autism.
Right. No, I'm not disputing that by any way, shape, or form.
That is what's being told by the other side. They accept that as a fact.
Okay, but if you want
not.
A fact, we have more and more parents who are deciding not to vaccinate their kindergartners because of this personal belief exemption. If we go back to 2000, It increased from about 1.5% in 2000 to about 5.5% last year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a huge jump in just the last year. Exemptions on the personal level are now kissing about 6%. And we also know, fact, that Maricopa, the largest county in here in our great state of Arizona,
sure,
is at risk for a measles epidemic.
Because
those are all facts.
Right. And we're at risk of it because we are at a lower immunization rate, vaccination rate, correct? That puts us at this risk we talk about. I'd love to believe that education is going to be the thing that changes it. And again, I just get back to, and when you see some of these debates, it's like banging your head against a wall where how do you have a conversation with someone who doesn't accept facts?
But when you talk about the governor and trying to get more education, and you pose the question, Bruce, how does that get anybody to change their mind? You also got to keep in mind that the governor can't unilaterally decide to take away the personal exemption from parents. That's something that our state lawmakers
would have to do. Again, and some states have done it. We're not there yet in Arizona, and I don't know if we'd ever get to that point. And I'm not, to be clear, I'm not trying to mandate vaccines. I do think the state of Arizona, though, could do things like prevent kids from attending school if they're not vaccinated.
Well, you have actually had some lawmakers down at the Capitol that tried to introduce legislation that would have removed the personal exemption, but it didn't get anywhere. In fact, mm-hmm, it wasn't even assigned to a committee hearing to be heard.
Couldn't even get started. Yeah. Well, that alone might be one of the reasons why you think we're going to heck in a handbasket. Well, guess what? Pamela says she's going to restore your faith in humanity. That's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yeah, there's plenty of days that I think we're just the opening act for Dave Ramsey, Pamela. You think of it that way, you know? Big star comes on. We're here to kind of warm up the crowd a little bit. Hopefully we're doing a good job with that. But Dave has an amazing team around him. Yeah. One of the people, and someone we've met at some of Dave's live events. We've been on stage with him, is Ken Coleman. And Ken has a new book out called The Proximity Principle. Ken is in town as we speak. He was just tweetifying me and has an event going on at the Barnes & Noble at Village Square at Dana Park tonight at 6 o'clock. That's in Mesa.
Yeah, it's off of Val Vista. Like the Val Vista in like the 60 is right where that's
sure,
at.
I know that. Okay.
Totally easy. Now, Ken's going to be giving away some $450, a $50 Starbucks gift card, prize winner, all kinds of things with career coaching with Ken. But you got to be present in order to win. That's now, that's going on tonight. But we have had the opportunity to sit down and talk to Ken about his book. And he explained to us, what exactly is the proximity principle? Take a listen.
The proximity principle says, in order to do what I want to do, I've got to be around people that are doing it and in places where it is happening.
He's pretty much taking a look at your job, your career. If you're not in love with what you're doing right now, if there's something else that's really drawing you to it, don't wait until you've got like a midlife crisis to take that
solid
action,
argument, right? Solid argument.
You can do it now.
We asked Ken, so why this book?
We built it out into a book which is designed to help people attack that dream job and not have to deal with the fear and the doubt that accompanies so many of us as we step out into something new. And if you know, if you get around the right people and in the right places, that opportunity will find you.
And that's exactly what the proximity principle is.
Well, I think a lot of successful people would tell you that's exactly what it is breaking out of maybe that little bit of that comfort zone, surrounding yourself with people that that can help you. And again, Ken is going to be talking about the book itself out in Mesa tonight at 6 o'clock. One of the things we got a chance to ask Ken Coleman about is, so where is this stuff? Is it readily available? Where'd you find all this info for this book, The Proximity Principle?
I began to research who can teach me what I need to know. And not only can teach me, but wants to teach me.
And that's how, you know, what he kind of stumbled into the whole Proximity Principle. This is what he has learned by walking through this. And he kind of coaches you through that yourself, because I know that there are a lot of people listening right now that don't love the job that they're in, that would love to change it or try something new, don't know where to begin. Ken's helping you out with that in this Proximity Principle new book.
And you can sit there. You can meet Ken tonight, 6 o'clock, Barnes & Noble at Village Square at Dana Park. Think Val Vista Drive in Mesa, 6 p.m. tonight. Ken Coleman, all the Dave Ramsey fans and the disciples will be out there. And Ken is a great guy. So personable in person.
You're going to learn a lot, too.
You'll learn something. You really enjoy your time. So have fun with Ken tonight. Hey, guess what, though? We end things on the high like we always do. Guess Pamela's going to restore your faith in humanity.
You know what? I love this story. But for it, we got to go back to 1970. That's where it all begins. Kim Christensen at the time was only 13 days old when she stopped breathing while feeding. Her sister at the time remembers her baby sister changing color, lips were turning blue, face was getting dark. That's where Phoenix police officer Gary Michael enters the scene. He had just been on the job for about 3 years. He was a block and a half away, runs into the house, grabs Kim, the baby, again, 13 days old, hopped in his patrol car, Bruce, because back in those days, he says, we didn't have the fire department arriving. We were the first line of duty when it came to first aid. So this guy is literally driving to the hospital, Maryvale Hospital, holding one hand with the steering wheel. The other hand had baby Kim in it, and he's performing CPR on the child.
Whoa.
As they're getting closer to the hospital, he's providing that CPR. And you know what? She started to take a couple few deep breaths. She spit up on herself, spit up on him a little bit. By the time they got to the hospital, she was okay. Now, over the years, Kim and her family have since left Phoenix. They moved away to the Midwest. And Kim has told her husband that the number one item on her bucket list is to meet Gary Michael in person.
Heck yeah.
Because she has a wonderful life. And you know what? They were able to reconnect thanks to the wonders of the internet this past weekend. She says she owes him everything for saving him. And they're so happy that the two of them got to meet over the weekend.
Outstanding. Great story. Restoring faith in humanity. Thanks a lot to Pamela. Hey, and Pamela and I look through the Double Pain Bulletproof Glass. Well, now we've got DJ Tommy Two-Tone, super producer Stevie Z, and Bob McClay.